All right. That time again. It's 9 o'clock out here, Pacific Standard Time. Midnight Eastern Standard Time. And God only knows what time it is in Japan right now. I'm just kidding. We've got James Corbett on the program this evening, again, co-host. This is Republic Broadcasting Network, your program In the Zone. I am Lieutenant Eric Schein, a graduate of Kings Point, the United States Merchant Marine Academy, a fellow academy to West Point and Annapolis and the Air Force Academy. There are four military federal service academies, and there's one federal, well, there's actually several if you want to include FBI and Langley and Quantico and more. But the Coast Guard Academy is a federal maritime police academy, and it has been turned into a special branch of military overnight in 2003 and is now carrying on martial law, military law, as a form of martial law, and imposing itself, while it comes under martial law, military law, upon civilians and civilian law and even civilian licensing. And they hold the National Driver Registry. They are also behind the TWIC card, Transportation Worker Identification Card. The Coast Guard was not only formed by Wilson in 1915 in the middle of World War I, but the first Coast Guard Commandant, Admiral Berthoff, was court-martialed out of the Naval Academy, and he was also, interestingly enough, knighted by the King of England. And anyone who knows and has listened to my program knows that I'm on this anti-royalist bent, for want of a better word or a better way of saying it. Much like our founding fathers were, and a lot of people are attacking our founders for whatever reason, they were born into a system that was imperfect. They tried to change it and create a system to where we could improve upon it and change it. And we were, for a great period of time, that quote-unquote beacon on the hill, to where I do believe that we did have, much more so than any other country in time, a system of, by, and for the people. And you can look at even, you know, Supreme Court case precedents and more. But most recently, you know, we've got people like Justice Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court, and his father was the president of the American Fascist Society. I mean, how many people know that? How many people talk about that? How many people are disturbed by that? When we come back, we're going to break. We'll have James on, and we'll get into all sorts of stuff. This is Republic Broadcasting, your program In the Zone. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. James, my friend, are you there?
I think I am. Are you there?
I am.
Then it's agreed. How are you doing tonight?
Not too bad, you?
I'm doing pretty good, all things considered.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Oh, well, and nothing in particular, just the general state of the world. But actually, this week I was very curious to get your take on an interesting story that I saw pop up on CNBC earlier this week. NYSE traders say yes to Germany, no to Lederhosen. And it's talking about the German takeover of the New York Stock Exchange, which people are trying to downplay, but I think you might have a different take on it.
Well, I mean, you've heard me talk about all this stuff. I mean, doesn't it kind of strike you with everything that I've said, like, wow, maybe he's right?
Well, no, certainly there's a lot more behind the scenes than is let on in these types of whitewash reports, and I encourage people to go to CNBC to try to read them. But, yeah, I mean, clearly, clearly there's some major things going on in the financial world, and we see Europe and Germany and the old financial center definitely taking full outright control of the American economy. And I guess there has been a certain degree to which there's been control for hundreds of years, and certainly since the institution of the privately owned illegal Federal Reserve in 1913.
Exactly, and gee, who did that?
Well, that would be the Rothschilds and other European banking elite, but
J.P. Morgan.
J.P. Morgan, yeah, one of the guys who went out to Jekyll Island in the secret meeting to set it up. So,
and one of the guys, whose descendants are involved in my own affairs, Archie Morgan IV.
Yep, what a wonderful family affair it is to try to keep the American people suppressed.
Well, and that's where, you know, I focused on the one common thread throughout all of this is, depending on which side of the fence you sit on, is royalism or anti-royalism, royalism or republicanism, to where it's either of, by, and for a group of self-appointed elites, royal families, or if it's of, by, and for the people.
I agree with the sentiment of that, but I wonder, so where do you place things like the French Revolution that instituted the French Republic, and then you have people like Robespierre, you know, chopping everyone's head off because they weren't revolutionary enough, and it becomes another form of tyranny under the name of republicanism.
Well, that's, you've heard of, who's the professor, Spark? No, I'm trying to think, Jeff. The individual who's supposedly being, oh, I can't think of his name. It'll come to me. You'll probably recognize what I'm talking about. But the individual who is, I guess, being accused of or credited with what's going on in Egypt and much of the Middle East right now in these quote-unquote green revolutions or whatever you want to call them.
I don't know specifically who you're referring to, unless it's – are you talking about the guy from Google?
I don't think it's somebody who...
Are you talking about George Soros?
No. It was an individual who wrote an essay, and it was about, you know, basically it, along the lines of Gandhi, or Martin Luther King, about non-violent revolutions.
Interesting. No, I don't really know what that's about, or I haven't heard of that specific story, but it is interesting.
Well, he had actually written an essay, and supposedly it's what they modeled the, civil unrest and or protest and what appears to, I guess, be a revolution of sorts on in Egypt and, I guess, Yemen and Tunisia and a couple other countries where I guess it's spreading into now. You know, it's basically the people, you know, A, not being afraid. I mean, look what happened in Egypt. It turned around in 18 days because the people took charge and said enough is enough.
Agreed. Absolutely. And there, you know, there's a lot of caution that has to be taken with these things because, of course, there are the usual manipulators behind the scenes trying to manipulate this for their own ends. But I think the ultimate underlying spontaneous grassroots movement of the people is something to be lauded and applauded and encouraged elsewhere around the world.
Well, and that was one of the things in his essay was to ensure that, if there is a quote-unquote changing of the guard, for want of a better word or term to use, other than revolution, I don't know if I can use that word. I think it's been taken out of my lexicon of vocabulary.
Yeah. Sounds like dangerous talk.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, you see what's going on with me already, and if I even use that word, it could be used against me in Homeland Security or a Coast Guard proceeding or something, which they've already tried to do. I mean, it's ridiculous, but the thing was to not allow a dictator to arise to ensure that there was a a movement from, you know, what was to what should be, and to prevent a dictator from stepping in, because that's exactly how Mubarak came in.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, it's so true, and it's something that we have to ponder. And here's my big deep thought for the day. I mean, even if you look at the word revolution, what's it talking about? I mean, you revolve, you go around in a circle, and you come back to where you started. So, I mean, we have to come up with a different concept, I think, because just getting out onto the streets and rioting and turning cars over and things is one thing, but to actually truly affect political change is something very different, and it's not an easy process by any means, and it's extremely difficult. And think of it this way, I mean, the only reason that we're hearing about these protests and it's a big media story is because at some level it does serve some of the interests of the big corporate government foundation-funded media itself. And if this was heading in the wrong direction, we wouldn't be hearing it on the nightly news every night.
Right. Well, I'm trying to find and search the. I want to say it's. I can't think of his name. Total blank for whatever reason. But he wrote an essay. And supposedly the essay that he wrote has been passed around, and a lot of people aren't really talking about him. A lot of people are kind of through the grapevine, so to speak. But his essay is credited with and or used as a guide to an extent for not only pushing the envelope, I guess, and bringing about what is going on in the Middle East right now, and taking down some of these, you know, even Gaddafi, I guess, is under siege to some extent right now.
Absolutely. I mean, there's tectonic shifts going on right now, and it's an exciting time to live.
Yeah, well, what's the Chinese curse, right, or the Chinese
curse or blessing, depending how you look at it.
Yeah, right.
You live in interesting times, right?
Exactly. No, but you know, and I was just talking to some kids, and I stopped for gas, and I was, you know, they're up on a lot of this stuff, and these kids were in their late teens, maybe early 20s, and they weren't as well versed on it, of course, as I or you, and others. But one thing that comes to mind, like even what you brought up initially in the show, was. Germany. And that's what I've been pointing at for God knows how long. The Hadron Collider that we had here in the United States that was being built and was to be the, you know, three times more powerful than anything else out there, a huge R&D tool, not just for peaceful purposes, you know, energy and more, but also for weapons technology. And that was shut down by Bush and crew. And now the only one that exists in the world of any magnitude is in CERN, Switzerland.
Yep, that's true. And CERN is in itself an interesting organization. And I know there's been a lot of internet speculation about them creating the black hole that will destroy the Earth and things like that. And me being a former physics major back in university, I was initially quite skeptical about such things because I know the way that science often gets twisted around in sort of public imagination. But when I started looking into it, there are some really interesting
disturbing.
And disturbing things about CERN.
Yeah.
I mean, right from the 666 in the logo of the CERN itself to the Shiva, you know, god of destruction and death outside the laboratory, and just all sorts of very bizarre symbolism and things going on there. So definitely worth looking into.
Well, and it's not just that, it's a backwoods for Germany. It is part of what was Greater Germania in its day. Who guards the Pope? It's the Swiss Guard.
Yeah, the Swiss Guard, right.
Oh, who is the Pope? Oh, he's this German guy named Ratzinger. You know, no coincidence there. Where was the cell that planned 9/11, supposedly or allegedly?
Hamburg.
You got it. Hamburg. And, you know, you just start adding up all of this stuff, and everything starts pointing back. T-Mobile, it's a German corporation. You start looking into what T-Mobile is up to, and what Bush was saying about, you know, as long as it goes outside the United States, then it's considered an international call, and we can wiretap or do whatever. Well, when you've got a foreign company that's running, you know, a huge communications network. What is your definition on how it's being routed, or if some of it goes outside something related to that call, whether it's the actual call itself? You know, just say the billing goes to Germany and then back to the United States. Is that enough under their understanding or definition or interpretation of the law to say that, well, we can wiretap all these people as well? And DHL is a German corporation, and the Heidelberg Group, and I could go on and on, but you hear the music coming up. We'll be right back. It's Republic Broadcasting Network, your program in the zone. I'm speaking with James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and we're going to break. Yeah, I want to come back on the note about what's going on with the stock exchange being snapped up by Germany, was the thing about Chrysler being bought by the Germans back in the day, and Iacocca pumping it all up with U.S. taxpayer funds and basically restoring the company and then selling it off to the Germans. And the Germans had it for a while. The people in Chrysler who set it up thought that they, you know, had bought Mercedes-Benz, when in fact Mercedes or Daimler-Benz actually bought Chrysler. When they, you know, the ink was dry, they were like, oops. And so Chrysler bought, or Chrysler was purchased by the Germans and then sold back to a company here in the United States called Cerberus. It's been sold off again, I think, at least once, if not twice. But Cerberus is named after, and guess who was ahead of Cerberus? It was Jon Snow, Secretary of the Treasury, who helped set up a lot of stuff with the bailouts and all kinds of other stuff. And Jon Snow was head of CEO of Sealand, or Maersk, which was a shipping company. And that's, it's owned by the, I think it's Dutch or whatever. Goes to AP Moller, who I believe is Dutch. And AP Moller is who had set up Maersk Lines, M-A-E-R-S-K. But the, what people don't realize is that, Chrysler owned and controlled the M1A1 main battle tank through its tank division. I think it was sold off to General Dynamics prior to, and that was part of the deal. But it's my position and it's my belief that the plans or information and technology relating to the M1A1 Abrams main battle tank was funneled out of the country to Germany in and under and as cover in what that sale was used for. And then you look at, like, the refueling tankers that were awarded to Germany, or not Germany, I'm sorry, the EU, Airbus, you know, a consortium of European companies, to provide us with our refueling tankers. I think it was basically for them to manufacture them, and then they'd ship us all the parts, and then we'd assemble them or something here in the United States, which is just simply amazing that no one in the Defense Department or the President or anyone else was disturbed by this. But at the same time, President Bush was, back in the day, second President Bush, he was setting up to have our container cargo and vessels inspected by Hutchinson Whampoa, which is a corporation, Chinese corporation, owned and controlled by the guy who was the second in command of the Chinese army, of the People's Liberation Army.
Yeah. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And then when you look into Anthony Sutton's work, where he exposed how the U.S. government had basically supplied all of the Soviet Union with its military technology, and then how that continued with the Chinese and being built up with the Clintons having various deals with the Chinese to provide them with various technologies. So,
well, exactly. Yeah, yeah, Long Beach Naval Shipyard. Yep. You know, and the guard. Kushner, right, who gave Clinton millions of dollars in political contributions. I don't know if you remember any of that or whatever with the Chinese gardener.
I'm vaguely familiar with that story, but I don't know the details very well.
Well, it was a while ago, too. But and people don't realize that Clinton, unlike George Herbert Walker Bush, who was knighted by the Queen of England, Clinton, rather than knight Clinton like they did with Giuliani and Ted Kennedy and all sorts of other people who are clearly serving the royal families of Europe, England, Germany, UK, European Union, they nominated Clinton for the Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports, all five southern ports in England, including Hastings. And that's, you know, you start looking at all the threads, like in my own situation, the first ALJ who sat in on my case or whatever, quote unquote, for Homeland Security, went to Hastings Law School. I think it's out here in California. And then the JAG prosecutor, before he became a JAG officer, before he became an attorney, he was the investigating officer and the citing officer in my case. He also goes to Hastings as well. And there is a lot, people don't realize there is a lot in a name. It's like you mentioned about with the Hadron Collider in CERN, Switzerland. The markings that they use, I mean, these people are, they're not only numerologists, but they're enormously into symbology.
Absolutely, and the more you look at the corporate logos, the more of that kind of stuff you see until it's just, it's quite ridiculous, some of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you're living in, it is. It gets to the point of being surreal. Well, there's just the music again. We'll be right back. 800-313-9443 is the call-in number. I want to get a little bit more into this and explore, you know, the what's going on with Germany. A little bit more. We did talk about it a little bit last week and stuff. We'll be right back. This is Republic Broadcasting Network, your program in the zone. Speaking with James Corbett, Corbett Report.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Back and talking to James Corbett, my co-host of the Corbett Report. This is In the Zone. I am Lieutenant Eric Schein, graduate of Kings Point. And James is telling me, I guess you're coming out with a new video?
Yeah, so I have my regular Sunday update video series. It comes out on YouTube, obviously, every Sunday. So it'll be coming out later today for me and early in the morning for you guys. But this week we're talking about activism. You asked me off-air there about whether I think that the work that we're doing and other people are doing is helping to make a difference. And this week I'm going to be highlighting some activism that's happened over the last week or two from people like Ray McGovern. People might have heard of Ray McGovern before. He's a 27-year CIA veteran. He used to give the daily presidential briefings to Reagan and the first President Bush. And he's been a member of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity for basically since the neocon regime came in 2001. And he's confronted Rumsfeld before in the past and others and done a beautiful job with that. So just last week, Hillary Clinton was giving a speech at George Washington University about the Egyptian protests and the protests in Iran and how wonderful it all is and how it's important to democracy. And as she's giving the speech, Ray McGovern stands up and he turns his back to her in a silent protest, not doing anything, just standing up and turning his back to her. But of course, security swoops in, a policeman and some unnamed, unknown security official of some sort comes in and they march him off, wrench his arm behind his back and march him out of there. And he ends up beaten and bloody in a jail for having dared to actually turn his back to her lordship. And it's just a remarkable footage to watch.
Isn't that what you used to get in trouble for if you did that to the king?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, they still do that. Here's a story you'll like, because I know you'll like this story. So I'm in Japan, and I live in this, it's sort of a backwoods town. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's not a big city. Most Japanese haven't even really heard of it. But once the emperor was going to be visiting the city, so it was a big deal. So I wasn't there at the time, but I had some students that I teach were telling me about it, and I guess so. There was this one woman who was telling me about her office, and the emperor on his routes through the city was going to be passing by the street where her office was located. So they all had to get their cars and turn them around to face the parade route, because you could not have the cars not facing the emperor as he went by. So, the funny thing is, I mean, every Japanese person I've ever met or talked to, none of them care about this. No one cares about the emperor. No one likes, you know, reveres him as a god on earth or anything. But it's just part of the society, and you just, you know, you put up with it and whatever. No one cares. But, I mean, it just shows that the mentality is still very, very, very much there. And it's the same thing when you meet the Queen of England. I mean, they have the whole list of things you have to do and you can't do, and you, of course, you can't turn your back on her. You have to approach her from the front, and you have to bow, and all of that ridiculous. Well, I can't use the words I want to use on air.
But that's exactly what ended up with Hillary Clinton, to where what yep. Ray McGovern did was turn his back on royalty, or
the American version thereof, anyway.
Right.
And it's the same thing at Bilderberg. They have strict rules that the serving staff at the hotel have to approach them from the right side. They can't approach them from the left side. They have to make eye contact. They can't speak unless spoken to. All of that ridiculous garbage that the people who like to pretend they're somehow superior to everyone else always institutes on the regular Joes like you and me. So it's disgusting, and no one enjoys that. And that's why there are so many leaks from Bilderberg every year, because the staff, once they see how they're treated by these gods on earth, you know, they are just so disgusted, they want to leak out what happened inside.
Well, and these people really do believe that they are gods on earth.
Unfortunately, true. And you know, I mean, there was a time in which I would have scoffed at the notion, but the more you look into it and the more you look at the history of it, they truly believe they are genetically superior to you and me.
Right. That's why they're billionaires. That's why they're rich. That's why, you know, even Bill Frist and all these others, they have the same opinion. And I mean, think about what you could do if you had $1 billion.
I can't. I don't even want to. You know, I honestly, truly don't want.
Well, but not you first.
As a person,
any person, what a person could do if you had $1 billion.
Right.
Literally, you could do anything you want. You would be to the point of, and that's why we had, you know, even here in the United States, the estate tax, to where anything over a certain, you know, amount, because we didn't want, like, these heir or, you know, legacy families passing on from generation to generation to generation, to where they would literally, you know, the money begets power and power begets money, to where they would be able to take over not just control of the state or the city, but the nation and eventually the people.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And, I mean, the thing is, I mean, knowledge is power, and wealth buys knowledge, basically. So once you control the production of knowledge and the control of that knowledge itself, you've controlled society. And that's exactly how it operates from generation to generation.
Well, and if you're, you know, like Bill Frist, he had gone into the Senate and tried to undo the estate tax because his father had just died, you know, the Paris Hilton tax or whatever. His father had just died. His father and his brother had stolen billions of dollars from Medicare and Medicaid through HCA and Columbia, two medical corporations that they owned and controlled. And, you know, to say that Bill Frist wasn't a part of that, I think, would be an understatement and not, you know, taking a serious look at human nature. But he was to inherit billions of dollars that his father and brother had, you know, stolen from the U.S. government. They actually had to pay back $1.7 billion, and that was a fraction of what they you know, took. But he wanted to change the estate tax so that he would not be taxed heavily on this windfall profit from his father's piracy.
Yep, I mean, exactly. I mean, different rules for the rich and the rest of us. And that's how the foundations came about. It was, you know, as a tax haven for the multi-billionaires who had just been created by the fact that they managed to corner the railroads and the oil and all of that.
Well, and they're all, it's a bunch of families that are all intermarried that are working together. You know, I mentioned like Allen as an Admiral Allen. Loy is another as an Admiral Loy, Coast Guard. Admiral Allen is married to Pamela Hess. She's a Hessian. She's from Germany. It's Pamela Hess the Third. This is an old world royal family that was involved. You know, Rudolf Hess was deputy Führer to Adolf Hitler. You start looking into the ties to these people. You know, if it walks and like a Nazi and talks like a Nazi and acts like a Nazi, the chances are that it's a Nazi are probably pretty high.
Exactly right. And most people think the Nazis lost the war, but they really just went underground. And we have things like the Red House report that showed how they wanted to institute a European Union to use as a lever for continuing their Nazi ideology of creating a one European state.
Right, and having a quote-unquote master race to,
It was through the control of the currency they were going to bring it about. I mean, the one European currency was absolutely central tenet to this this secret report of the meeting of the Nazi leaders. I think it was back in 40, 41, 42-ish, you know, when things were starting to turn, and it was obvious they weren't going to ultimately win the war, so they started making their plans and started sending people, well-funded people out around the world to set up corporations.
And that was Martin Bormann, who was instrumental in that, and the Catholic Church through a program known as Paperclip.
Well, Paperclip, I'm aware of. I don't really know about the Catholic Church's role in Paperclip.
No, they helped with the whole rat's nest, or not rat's nest, but the rat line, right, of individuals, former Nazis coming out of Germany. The Catholic Church was actively involved in all of that. I mean, why do you think we now have a German Pope? We haven't had a German Pope in, I think it's well over 1,000 years.
Well, why now? That is a good question. Why now?
But look at everything else that's going on. You start adding it up and it's like, ThyssenKrupp, two German weapons and warship manufacturers from Nazi Germany that are married into the Habsburg family, German royalty that started World War I when Duke Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were assassinated along with a couple other members of the Habsburg family in Italy by the Black Hand. The ThyssenKrupp families are married to each other. They're married into the Habsburg family, and they're the ones who won the elevator contract for the new Freedom Tower at the World Trade Center. How does that happen? How can a German corporation that's directly tied to German royalty win the elevator contract for the World Trade Center in the United States?
Well, in the exact same way that the Union Banking Corporation could fund the Nazis and get shut down right after the start of World War II as cooperating with the enemy. And then, of course, Prescott Bush goes on to father and grandfather the presidents of the United States.
Right. Well, and he worked with Thiessen Steele, which is what he was prosecuted for, and found guilty for trading with the enemy.
Yep. And was part of the business plot in the 1930s to overthrow FDR.
Smedley Butler.
Smedley Butler, yeah. Smedley Butler blew the whistle on.
Right. Well, and even, you know, his seminal book, War is a Racket, goes to the heart of it all. And I think even Eisenhower realized, and he talked about, and it's left out of his, when people quote Eisenhower about the military-industrial congressional complex, to where it's a bunch of these rich elite families who have, you know, like Jane Harmon, she's the richest, she's now leaving, of course, Congress, which is, interestingly enough, as are a bunch of other people. I think people are starting to realize that the gig is up, not just here, not just in the Middle East and certain countries. Like even the King of Jordan has German roots. And I think people are starting to realize that, oh, just like what has happened in the last 1,300 years since Greater Germania was brought together under Charlemagne, the emperor, that everything going on not only in Europe but the United States, including Canada, and overseas in Asia and Japan and more, all revolves around Germany and what those the power broker families and players who, you know, they've got assets and resources and property in Italy and Spain and England and, you know, the United States and in Asia and more, South America, Africa, of course, Australia, you name it. But these families have been around for not just generations, not even just hundreds of years. Many of them have passed the mantle from one generation to another for thousand, if not several thousand years.
Well, you've got Saxe Coburg Gotha at the top of the pile right now.
Well, that's Windsor's. Yeah, and that's
Yeah, that British family, right? Yeah.
Well, and Bush Davis Walker. It's like, look what's going on in Wisconsin. Scott Walker is the governor of Wisconsin, where all these protests are about public servants and, you know, collective bargaining and unions and more. Scott Walker is a member of the Bush Davis Walker family.
Right, I've heard the headlines about that story, but I don't know much of the details. What exactly is going on in Wisconsin?
Well, he's basically trying to undo collective bargaining unions for public service workers.
Right. So I've heard it's spreading to Ohio now, and other unions are getting involved.
Well, people are starting to really realize that these are all direct attacks against citizens. It's not about union members. It's not about people. One of the things is union jobs used to be the standard bearer. They used to make sure that all other wages, non-union, would be close to, or to even get people who were non-union or people who were better or brighter to work a non-union job, a lot of times they'd have to pay more than union because there were other benefits that went with, you know, union jobs. The private sector was as high as 33%, I think, here in the United States at one point. It's down to, you know, single digits in most. And people are starting to realize that, you know, just like these rich elite families are doing and working together, no matter if we're Jewish or Christian or Catholic or agnostic or atheistic or don't even care about religion whatsoever, and we're not even raised that, but we might be Irish or Catholic Irish or Italian or, you know, even English coming here to the United States and becoming an American or Canadian or anything else, it doesn't matter that it's the very same thing that has been going on for thousands upon thousands of years. These people who believe that they're better than everybody else, that they have the divine right to rule over and lord themselves over others, and that they have some kind of divine connection to God himself, that they must, you know, and they look down upon us through their nose. You know, like you said, the edicts that were put out on the waiters and staff at many of the restaurants and stuff for those who were serving or catering to the Bilderbergs and others.
Yep, unfortunately, very, very true. And I think people need to start really looking into that for themselves to really understand what goes along with that. But there's so much history that you could look back on from the ancient Egyptians believing the pharaoh was the sun god and on earth, or the Chinese and their emperor had the mandate of heaven, or the British and the Europeans had the divine right to rule. And it always went back to this theological idea that there was some God-given right for these bloodlines to rule over other people. And then once that started to, you know, wane away in the scientific age, they needed a scientific reason to lord over others. So they came up with the social Darwinistic idea that, well, they're rulers because they deserve to be rulers because they're genetically superior. So it's the exact same stupid, ridiculous, garbage fantasies of these would-be rulers of the earth, and it's still baseless and ridiculous, and no one really believes it except them. But unfortunately, they have the resources, and they have control of a lot of organizations that matter. And going back to the Eisenhower military-industrial complex thing, I just found out recently the real impetus for him inserting that in his farewell address was the Rand Corporation coming out with a report in the 50s about the missile gap, and how Eisenhower was letting a missile gap open up with the Soviets. And of course, it was complete bunk. They were saying the Soviets had 500 ICBMs or something, when at that point, they, in actuality, now that we can look at the records, they only had 4. So it was a completely fabricated. And Eisenhower knew it. He knew they were trying to manipulate him to start the Red Scare in earnest. And so he warned about that in the farewell address. Rand went to the Kennedy campaign and were telling them, it's the missile gap, it's the missile gap. You've got to watch out for that. So Kennedy actually campaigned on that, and that's part of how he got into power. And when he found out Rand had completely lied to him and made it up, he said, oh, well, you know what? Well, he said a four-letter word that I can't repeat on air. But at any rate, he was not happy, and that was the start of the turn for JFK.
All right, we'll be right back. This is Republic Broadcasting Network. We're speaking with James Corbett, our co-host. He's of the Corbett Report. And this is Republic Broadcasting Network, your program in the zone. I'm Lieutenant Eric Schein. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back. And I'm popping my Extendivite right now, man. Ooh, ah. It's good stuff, people. All right, now, I wish people would pick up Philip Bobbitt's book, The Shield of Achilles, and read that and understand that what they're trying to do is to reinvigorate, recreate the United Kingdom worldwide. And it's the United Kingdom run by Germany. The Windsors are German, I hate to tell you. Maybe the English understand that well. Even James Bond is now German. Saw the latest Bond, like in Casino Royale, and if he's not German, I don't know. Maybe he's Swedish. That the new actor that they have playing James Bond. And I'm not, nothing against Germans, nothing against Germany. Germany was a republic. They tried to do what was done in Italy and in many other countries, even here in the United States, and have a system of by and for the people and do away with the aristocrats, the elites, the royal families. But every time in a republic, and it's almost as if they allow it to happen, they use the republic as an ATM machine. They come in, they crash the republic, take the public commons, and make it their own. Even now, you can see the privatization of our postal system. They're going to be shutting down thousands of offices from the United States Postal Service. And they're saying it's because we can't afford this. Like even Scott Walker in Wisconsin, because of the dire circumstances that the state of Wisconsin are in, they can't afford union workers for public servants. They can't afford a living wage. They can't allow people their First Amendment right, their right to assemble, to form a union if they want, and to collectively bargain and to work together for their common welfare. And somehow now the governor of the state is coming out against that. And you can already see this has been going on for quite some time, these quote-unquote right-to-work states here in the United States, where union workers, trade unionists, anyone who sticks up for their fellow man or for themselves, for that matter, is coming under attack from this, what's clearly a military-industrial coup of the United States government, to where our military, and I've said this for some time, is in charge. And I think the clear sign is the Coast Guard, to where you've got it now, instead of being a civil service agency in the Department of Transportation, it's a newfound special branch of military and Homeland Security that's saying it's coming under martial law, military law, and that it can somehow administer civilian affairs, civilian programs, civilian law, and even adjudicate civilian law and thus make civilian law.
You got it. It's a frightening state of affairs, and you're caught up in the middle of it. So people, once again, people got to get behind your case and start spreading the word and start getting some support.
Yeah, I could really use a fundraiser, a defense fund, some real legal counsel, people that know. I mean, because you talk about a dearth of legal scholars or legal, lawyers, counsel, whatever. The rich have the best lawyers. if you're a 95%er out here, you know, out here with 95% of the rest of the population, and you go out and you come into a situation like this, and you try to gain counsel, good luck. I mean, I've been told that they quote unquote put the fix in on me, and I don't know if that's some kind of voodoo curse that the rich elite throw out there, or they just play interference and use the FBI and others to place calls and make sure that you can't get help or assistance or relief or intervention. But it's crazy, man.
It's crazy, but we're still at it, and we'll be back again next week.
But thanks, James. And I'll talk to you Friday, right?
Sunday.
No, Saturday.
Saturday for you.
All right. Thanks, man. Peace. Have a good weekend.